Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of SNP Schneider-Neureither & Partner SE regarding the presentation of the full year results 2020. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Christoph Marx, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes. Thank you, operator. Hello, everybody, and welcome also from my side to the conference call for the full year results 2020. I hope you all had the chance to see and read the information we published this morning, which is namely our, of course, annual report for the fiscal year, plus the corresponding press release. If not, they can both be found on our homepage under the section Investor Relations, where you will also find the presentation we prepared for this call. Today, we have gathered again our CFO, Heiner Dieffenbach, as well as our CEO, Michael Eberhardt, to give you some more details on the results and on the recent developments. With that being said, I would like to hand over to you, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Christoph, and also a warm welcome from my side to this analyst and investor call. We have prepared, in principle, three topics for today. First of all, I would like to give you a short overview about the financials 2020 together with Heiner, and then we both will focus on our Q1 2021 result and the outlook for the rest of the year. At the end, I guess we have enough time to go for Q&As. If we go to page number three, the year 2020 was a very challenging year. We had a couple of very interesting and also very sad tasks and hits for the organization with the death of Andreas, which was really something which nobody expected. This took us a while to get the focus going forward. In principle, parallel, we had the full year 2020 to do with COVID, something which was new for the company. In principle, I would say, having all this kind of special tasks, we delivered a solid, not an exciting, but a solid result, which is a good basic for our business in 2021. We are on the revenue side, we are more on the lower side of our revised guidance, which is not, let's say, what we had expected, but we have seen a couple of project delays. We got signing from customer, but the project did not start, especially here in Europe, and also very much focused on the manufacturing industry, which was, let's say, specific hard hit by the COVID-19 situation. We had a solid software sales, increased software sales, more or less starting, let's say, with our partner business on the one side, but also good direct business and a couple of bigger deals with important customers, which I will target afterwards a little more in detail. Our order entry was down by 8%, but still significantly positive in terms to book-to-bill. With 184 million order entry, we had a very good contribution to our order backlog. At 2019, we just had to adjust our EBIT, and the EBIT went by 3.6 million, caused by an impairment of our U.S. real estate, which will help us going forward, but it was a hit for our EBIT in 2019. With that, we started additional compliance audits so that we can be absolutely clear that our books are clean, that the company is working in a compliant mode, and there were no finding, which is good for us going forward. Our guidance for 2021 is on the revenue side, somewhere between 160 million and 180 million revenue, and we expect to achieve a 5%-8% EBIT margin. Very clear, we do not have a change in our strategy. We just need to execute what we have presented here several times, and we see a good trend in our partner business, but still behind our expectation. When we talk about the partner business, it's not about pipeline. I will show you later on. The pipeline increased really good. We have seen that this is a several-step approach. We need to acquire partners, and we have acquired roughly 20 partners more in 2020, which is really great. It took us a while to build up the pipeline with the partner, and it also takes time to get from a pipeline to order entry, from an order entry to revenue. In principle, we are all convinced that our strategy really applies and echoes very well with the market. But the timeline behind it was somehow underestimated from all of us, also from my side, because I thought we can really get the result from the partners earlier on the top line, but also on the bottom line. If I go to the next page, here, this is the geographical distribution of the revenue by region. You see, let's say, the still close to 50% of the revenue comes from Central Europe with a very strong service business. This was a challenge and a good side as well, because Central Europe is our bank. We have a lot of existing customers, long-time customers where we can also test something, very open feedback with companies like Siemens, Bosch, and others. And this really helps us to let's say, get a feedback here and then roll out to the rest of the world. A good growth in Eastern Europe and Middle East, solid growth, good growth in Latin, which is highly respected, because we all know that the economy in South America is not, let's say, the most easy one. We made some progress in the U.S. We hired a new MD, which was very late, starting with Q4, but we see now the real positive impact also in the order entry in Q1. So I guess that U.S. will develop nicely now in 2021. We had a solid business in JPEG, and we see the momentum are going on also now in Q1. And UK did an okay job with some challenges now in Q1, but I see, let's say, a good signal from the market. The market is getting back to normal. They are ahead of us in terms of managing the pandemic. So we see that UK is, let's say, from a size, it's not really important, but it's important that all of our regions are positively contributing on the revenue side and on the profit side. If we go to page number 5, this is the partner business. I think I'm very proud to be, let's say, the partner for data transformation for a lot of big brands. We just recently signed a deal with Accenture, which is not here on the slide deck. We had a good mix between mid-sized companies like Share, All for One, and the local MHB, for example, or Abacus, or Swisscom, but also big system integrators like Wipro or Microsoft or Fujitsu and others. So our partner revenue is not, let's say, where it should be. We had something like 26 million revenue with partners. This is 80% growth, but it should be, let's say, more than 50% growth. As I said, pipeline is good. We get every day better how we engage together, how we do team selling, and how we do team delivery. But it took more time to get the customers up and running in an expected way. And then our order entry is ahead of the revenue, which is good, because we are building up order backlog also in the partner area. And when I looked, let's say, now forward for 2021, we see every day the increased number of pipeline, the increased numbers of opportunities. We had close to zero business with Deloitte in 2020. We have now very solid opportunities already in Q1, and hopefully a couple of closings in Q2. So I would say this is a proof of concept. The model works. Our strategy is right. We need to focus on execution, be close with our partner, be, let's say, prepared to go together to the market and to develop the market towards our direction. If I go to the next page, also here from a content point of view, we still focus on the four main scenarios. We have more scenarios than the four, but the main one are the carve-outs, the moves. Move to the cloud is a very important one, because we all know that the cloud offers new opportunities for our customers and flexibilize their cost. Companies like partners like SAP had this announcement with RISE. Microsoft Azure is a very important partner for us. We have some good solid business with Amazon in the US and in Latin America. Google is highly interested, just did a couple of assessments together with us, and the new strong partner in this area is IBM Cloud. IBM has decided to do, whenever they do, they move a complex SAP environment to their cloud, they will use our Crystal Bridge Analyze methodology to understand the current mode of operation of a customer environment. And then we see more and more business transformation. COVID also demonstrated to a lot of companies that they need to get a more flexible kind of organization. They need to focus more on their core business. So we will see more merger, but also more acquisitions. We also will see an increased number of divestitures, which we see already today, which is our bread and butter business. And we like the complexity. As more complex the environment is, as more time critical the environment is, as better is our value proposition towards the customer or the prospect. And then we also see, like in Daimler, we see a restructuring of business units so that customers, companies are restructuring internally and they focus more on their core business, or they split off some of the business, like Daimler, for example, or also IBM with their GTS business. So that's really good. And then we see still, and I think this will even accelerate, new technology, new technology innovations. I think SAP HANA is something which is already, let's say, long time in the market compared to what we see in other areas. But we see that the companies are moving stronger, faster towards new platforms. And we still fight to convince the customers and the market that Bluefield is the approach the customer should choose instead of going for a big bank or just doing a typical brownfield. So I go to page number 7. What does this mean for us? I think everything what we do today echoes well in the market. We see this increased business reorganization, which are accelerating. We see technology platforms will be let's say, modernized, will be innovate every time. We see the cloud environments will be become, let's say, not only attractive, but critical for to be, let's say, in the market, to have the flexibility, to be less depending from single employees. And COVID also demonstrates that this is critical for some companies to survive, because you get a more automated environment with less people dependency. Our industrialized approach is a huge, let's say, asset for us going forward, so that we are building up right now a joint delivery factory with Accenture, for example. This is, on the one side, a huge asset, because we can deliver the services much faster, much better, in a higher quality with significant less cost. What we have also seen on the partner side is, when we talk about the big system integrators, the partners still stick very much to their old model. That means it's, for most of the companies, still a labor arbitrage kind of model, means more people utilized by, let's say, a solid charge-out rate delivers more revenue. That means our industrialized software approach, software-driven transformation approach, is a management of change program at the same time for all of our partners. And I think that's one reason why it will take us more time to get this down to the street, because we have always the full buy-in of the headquarter of the partner. But then to get from the headquarters down to the customer, to the industries, to the single customer and the customer, let's say, the account team, this is a real challenge which we have partly or underestimated about the speed, how we can develop, how fast we can develop this business. And then we have a couple of very nice experience with companies where they said, okay, a digital transformation, a data transformation for me is not longer a project by project decision. We need to go to a platform which we will use for all this kind of business going forward in a strong way. So this is what you see here. In history, S&P was very much focusing on project license. That means we have sold software and a service to deliver a single project on the customer side. The result was our time that we stay in the customer was very limited to something like 12 to 24 months. And then we need to look for a new business. Now, we have learned that, for example, in S4, customers are doing this very often in waves for different systems or different geographies. That means when we can sell beside a project license, a program license for an S4 program, our duration to stay in the customer is maybe more something like 2 to 4 years, 2 to 5 years. And then based on that, we started a program, for example, what we have sold to E.ON, to say, hey, we give you an enterprise license. Whatever you do in terms of data transformation around SAP ERP, you get a software. You pay, you can get the software in a subscription kind model, or you can buy the software. Then you buy the software and you pay maintenance. We educate your team. You can do part of the project by yourself, and we will help you to be your extended workforce when you need more people for, let's say, a specific program. And this is what we do in E.ON today. SAP is doing the S4 transformation, the S4 implementation. We do all the data transformation together with E.ON for the next, at least for the next 5 years. And this is what we would like to do, because then we are in the customer, we get a higher login, we get a higher recurring revenue, and we have a huge chance to be, let's say, long-term with the customer, to be the partner for all data transformation around SAP. So if we go to the next page, page number 9, when we do this enterprise license, then the factory approach is very much, let's say, a clear consequence that we go also to this data transformation factory. Why is this data transformation factory so important for us, but also even more important for the customer? The underlying software platform is our intelligence crystal bridge platform, with the phases starting with analyze until the operate phase, the migration phase, the orchestration phase. Then we have the industrialized services around the scenarios, the middle layer. So we have then like a production line in a manufacturing company, people which are highly focusing on S4HANA migration or cloud or move to the cloud or carve outs. And we also have then, let's say, above of that, standard methodology and governance. One thing which is important on the top layer, you see this mission control. Mission control is part of our crystal bridge, which is really guiding our people, our consultants, but also the consultants of the customer, the consultants of the partner, how to deliver a complex carve-out project or a complex cloud move or a complex S4HANA, any scenario, in the best way, highly controlled, so that you cannot get to step number 3 if step number 2 is not quality assured and green. So with that, we can guarantee the customer a very high quality of service, high speed, and continuous and harmonious services independent from the human being. That is a big advantage of the factory. And as I said, such a factory we just agreed together with Accenture, for example, to build something up like this for Europe in the first phase. And this, I guess, will make a big difference. This can apply for all the big enterprises like VW, BMW, Siemens. This can be something be for all the for the pharmaceutical industry, for the process industry, for the retail industry. We will force our team more to go from project services to enterprise services, and from delivering the service as a single project to a factorized data transformation factory. So I go to page number 10. The partner channel, when you see in terms of pipeline, we had a solid pipeline in 2020, and this is, let's say, even developing better going forward now during the course of the year. Our direct sales is still good. As we said, right now, we, from order entry point of view, we grow in all areas beside in UK East, but all the others are green in Q1 and strongly green. So we deliver something like 12% up to 50-60% growth in different regions, and this comes partly from the partner business, but also partly from the direct business. Very different. US is very much indirect business. JPEG is more or less a good mix between indirect and direct, but the focus is very much on indirect to go with partners. Europe is a good mix, still leading strongly with the direct model, which is important for us to get this learning and then to roll out this area. But all the new regions are, let's say, primarily led by a partner-led business, and we have some direct business so that we get some experience, some capability to support also our partners when they need help. So when we look to the headcount evolution, we always said, okay, we have invested significantly in 2019 to manage a growth for the future. Then COVID-19 went up in Q1 2020. We had a couple of discussions in the board. Should we let's say do a cost reduction? Should we lay off some of the people we just hired? We have decided not to do that, because most of the investments, when you look that we did most of the investment or all of the investments in strategic areas, software development with roughly 40 people, sales and marketing more in the sales area with roughly 50 people, and then we have 9 people added in our consulting business. That means it was a decision to show some continuity because talents are also important for us. But this was for sure the biggest hit on our bottom line because we took this, let's say, low utilization in some areas, even if the market did not respond as fast as we have thought. So with that, Heiner, I hand over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Michael, and also welcome from my side for our full year results. I will focus on the financial side, and maybe you have written all the ad hoc messages in February or March and April about the financial correction of 2019 and the change in our supervisory board. I will not talk about this. Maybe if there are still open questions around about that, we can cover this in the Q&A session later on. I will focus on the profits, on the segments, and as usual, on the balance sheet and the cash flow. And what we will add from now on to give you more insights, as Michael started with the revenue by regions, we will also give you some more insights on our cost ratios and revenues by segments, for example. So I would start with slide number 13. And focus again on the revenue. We closed our fiscal year 2020 with 143.8 million revenue, which is a slight decrease to last year, mainly driven by the service segment. Of course, we were able to reduce some of the costs. Nevertheless, as Michael explained, we have an increased number of employees because we keep investing in sales and R&D, and this led to a higher personal expense. And the other expenses were reduced, for example, because we saw less travel on one side, we reduced advertisement on the other side. Nevertheless, the bottom line is that we closed our fiscal year with an EBIT of 800,000 euro. Which is compared to the adjusted last year figure of 3.4 million, a slight reduction of 2.6 million. We were able to improve our revenue in the software arena up to 35% from 32 or 33% in last year. And if you have a look at the next slide, on slide number 14, you can see that we are bearing in our EBIT figure, roughly spoken, 4 million of non-EFRS, let's say, one-time effects, mainly driven by 1.5 million for personal restructuring measurements, also some legal advice of 1.4 million, and we had some 1.2 million other, let's say, investments or payoffs to reduce some of our supplier contracts or to, which I will cover later on in the cost-saving area, where we moved out, for example, in one of our office space. If we have a closer look to our cost ratios, I think that is give you more transparency on slide number 15. You can see that we are in average, roughly spoken, 6% is R&D costs, that we are in the selling or sales area with something like 15% or 20 million cost intense, and marketing is 9.3 million, and an area which we plan to reduce costs in the future is, of course, the general and administration area, because we need to be scalable and ready for more growth. And from my point of view, that's the area we are. Now on page 16, a closer look into our segments. As already addressed in the area of services, we saw a reduction mainly driven by the corona pandemic And especially in Q3 and Q4. And therefore, we see a reduction in the revenue by 3.8 million. And of course, this is reflected in the EBIT figures too. There is a comment that we had to adjust our figures for 2019. As explained, it was linked to the facilities in the U.S. On page number 17, you can see that we are, despite the reduction in overall revenue, we were able to increase the revenue in the segment software by almost 5%, up to almost 50 million, which is, from our point of view, a proof that the partner success is going forward. On the other hand, we were not satisfied with our Q4 result because we expected one bigger partner contract, and this did not come true. I thought it's maybe quite helpful to have a look at the revenue by industry on page number 18, and you can see that we are pretty much in line with SAP and the SAP industry split. We are in quite a robust area in the industries. For example, even in the consumer goods and retail, in pharma and healthcare, we were quite able. And in the manufacturing area, where they had a lot to do with the COVID and pandemic exercise, we were still able to show more than 30 million revenue in this area. If we now have a closer look at the order entry and order backlog, and I will cover that later on in a more detailed way also about this, I think this is on page 19. I think that the order entry of 184, even if it is lower than last year, and compared to the revenue, is 28% higher than the revenue. And this is, from my point of view, quite good, because this gives us really some support for growth in the future. So from my point of view, we need to be above of 110%, 115% to make sure that we are growing. Both areas, services and software, were able to provide some improvements in the order backlog. In the service area, something like 14-15% up compared to last year, and in the software area, 26%. And this is a reflection that we are closing deals with some maintenance in the future. And I think this is on top, really some positive news, because this will bring us into more recurring revenue. On page number 20, you can see the order entry by region, and based on that, what Michael already explained round about the revenue by region, we are quite positive in JPEG, for example, and in the EMEA region. If you have a look negative, you can say, oh, the Central Europe, that's, of course, a reduction, because compared to 2019, in 2019, we had two bigger deals, IBM and T-Systems, in these figures. And therefore, we were, as I said before, not able to close this one partner contract. And therefore, it's shrinking. And in the U.S., we have a new management in place by I would say Q3, Q4 last year, and therefore this is clear that you can't see this in the order entry figures already. On page 21, you can see we have done some homework, because in the last con calls, we had some questions round about the reconciliation of order backlog from, of course, the order backlog last period, order entry, revenue, and up to the reported backlog. And we cleaned up on one hand, adjusted some order backlog out of the previous years. And what is always an effect, and we were not giving this information in the past, what we have always in effect is that on the existing order backlog, you will see currency changes, and this is mainly out of Latin America, some 5 million euro, and then I call it volume adjustments. Volume adjustments, for example, if we receive an order intake in for a time and material project, let's say, for example, for a million, and we are done earlier, then, of course, we have to deduct the remaining amount not used or fully used. And this has also an effect in 2020. If we now have a closer look in the balance sheet and the balance sheet structure on page 22, you can see that we improved our cash and cash equivalents by 26 million, roughly spoken, and that you can also see the sale or the planned sale of our Poland unit is reflected in the goodwill and in the assets held for sales. And then our non-current contract assets is really increased on the back of new long-term partnerships, as explained by Michael at the beginning of our telco. On the equity and liability side, on page number 23, of course, you see also the Polish effect in the liabilities held for sale. And what you can also see is in the non-current financial liabilities, the increase of 10 million, this is based on the loan we took or the credit from Kreditanstalt für Wiederaufbau. And then maybe we're going to have a closer look at the equity, because equity ratio is up to 42%. This is, of course, because we increased our capital by 27 million, roughly spoken, but we had a downturn of another, let's say, 4 million on foreign exchange effects. And we also purchased 1 million, roughly spoken, 1.2 million of own shares. And this overall leads to an increase of 21 million in the equity area. I would close my remarks based on the cash flow statement and when we prepared the slides. Christoph and myself, we were talking about the promise we made last year that we will see a positive operating cash flow. We were able to achieve that by 2 million. I think that's quite a good achievement, even that we were not able to collect the IBM and the T system cash will come throughout this year probably. And therefore, I think it's really, or it's reflected that we are tight working capital management. And you can see also that the working capital ratio improved from 14.7% up to 18%. And I think this is quite a good achievement. Having that, this, I would like to hand over back to Michael for the outlook and Q1.
Okay, thanks a lot, Heiner. Let me focus now on Q1 2021 and the outlook for the rest of the year. So I'm on slide number 26. Our Q1 numbers we just announced, the preliminary numbers we just announced this morning, from a revenue point of view, we are slightly down compared to last year by 3.8%, which is on the software side, we have a slight growth, and on the revenue side, we are down by roughly 2 million. The challenge on the service side was that in January, we had our team the first 11 days fully in vacation. Also, let's say, forced, because our utilization was not as it should be the same. We had still a weaker utilization in February, and we are now back in normal operation, and we also had a solid profit in March. That means we see a much better time going forward. We see the good recovery in the market, but we also see that our utilization is increasing across all regions month by month towards the right direction. From an order entry point of view, it was a very solid quarter, because we know that Q1 2020 was not a COVID quarter, but this quarter it was still, let's say, hit by COVID, We had an increase of 10% order entry, and we built up a very solid pipeline. Our order backlog increased by 26% to now 133.9 million, which is a really good performance. And our pipeline is still growing. At the same time, we did some changes in the way how we reported the pipeline. So every day is still a learning day, because what we have seen is when we work in the partner business, it is not easy that to keep the pipeline totally clean, so that you don't have a double book and double and the same opportunity twice in your books, because you offer something twice with two different partners, for example. Now I would say the 508 million is a very solid, totally cleaned database, and with that I think we have a really good chance to see a good quarter, a good Q2, and even a better second half year. From a group EBIT, we made some improvements, still negative, so we are not proud to lose money. This needs to change, and our clear ask to all our employees and ourselves, Heiner, myself in specific, is that every quarter, quarter over quarter, and quarter, let's say, and Q1 against last year Q4, or let's say Q2 against Q1, need to be better than the quarter before. So that means we really do everything to leave this loss-making quarters behind us and to be in a profitable, growing business, what we have promised to you going forward. So some improvements, but not where we should be. And we still will fix this by improving our top line, but also to decrease some of the costs we should not have in our cost envelope. And Heiner will give you a short update about this in at the end of this presentation. So if I go to page number 27, we also announced two inorganic kind of things. We do this de-investment in Poland, just to give you an idea how big this company is. And we talk about 23 million revenue, 1.8 million profit, around 400 employees. We still believe that we can close this by the end of Q3. The commitment and the push from All for One is very hard. They would like to have this business because it really fits optimal in their environment. Business focus on this business is very much, non-transformation business, SAP consulting business, and cloud hosting business. And we also have set up a digital transformation center in Poland. Therefore, we do this 49%, let's say, and 51% step, so that we have more time to think about what we do with our DTC going forward. And the plan is that by the end of 2023 or maximum 1 year later, or for one, we'll acquire 100% of the business with a very strong earn-out put and call options. So why do we do this? Clear, you can see it. We will focus very much on our transformational business in a good mix between software and service, so that we are the data management and data transformation company around SAP, based in a solution area. So a combination between software and service will stay, but software will get more and more dominated. So then we did an acquisition with the EXA AG, revenue 10 million, EBIT roughly 2.5 million, 140 employees. We closed this transaction March 1st, 2021. They have a couple of solutions, but the main solution why we invested are, I would say there are three areas why we invest in this company. One is the global value chain software they offer for around SAP for all the big enterprises in the same industries, mainly in the process industry and the manufacturing industry. And the second part is the transfer pricing. And we also already defined a very nice third part, which is we plan maybe to build something up around the footprint of an enterprise around the full value chain. So that's really good, and this business fits very well to us because they do exactly the same business, one level higher compared to what we do in terms of they are more on the business solution side. They are fully focusing on SAP. They are very much focusing on SAP and software, so the developing software which they can resell with partners. And my personal experience is roughly more than 50% of the partners which we are using today could be also partner for EXA. And we also had one very strong access. EXA has a very good, great Indian delivery center, which differentiates very much compared to whatever I have seen so far. When you talk about an Indian delivery center for big companies like Accenture, IBM, Capgemini, the Indian players themselves, and so on, attrition is normally a big problem. This EXA is doing this in a different way. They have a different teaming approach. They pay the team a little bit more money. It's not huge. If you pay $1 or half a dollar more per hour, you have a totally different behavior. So they have a very stable, less fluctuation kind of things. And our plan is to deliver at least the services for our U.S. business in the future, also out of the Indian of this Indian center. Mm-hmm. So we are just on the way to set this up and to make this happen. And then the similar parts, by the end of 2024, or at least latest one year later, we have the chance to acquire the last 25% to 1%, so that we have 100% ownership. The plan is not to integrate this company in all under the name of S&P. It's also not the plan to integrate them fully in our processes. We manage them arm's length, but we drive the synergies on trying to go to market on let's say co-selling. We have some synergies on the delivery area, but we just said with this center in this area, but we only will focus on this part. Cost saving, you see this company is highly profitable and can be even better going forward. So S&P will stay as a data management, data transformation company around SAP. EXA will stay for business application, business solutions around SAP, which SAP is not offering in their own core business. If we go to the next page, I hand over to Heiner to give you a short update about the cost measurements and the efficiency measurements, because as I said before, our success will be depending on two things. The main dependence is we need to drive our revenue up to, let's say, something like 40, 50 million short term to really increase the run rate, and then this company will be highly profitable. But on the other side, we also need to look at where do we have cost in our organization which is not contributing on this growth message. And Heiner, back to you.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Besides the fact that we are managing really our cash position quite tightly, we established about in Q2 2020, when the COVID pandemic started, that Michael and myself, we are really close to each hiring and each investment. So, for example, investments above 5,000 euros and each individual hiring, and this both globally is really on our table on every board meeting every Monday. So what else did we do? And this you can see on slide 28. We are really reviewing our sponsoring activities, for example, in the golfing or in the local sport area, or sponsoring activities round about culture and politics. And we are really normalizing this down to a level which fits to our company size on one hand. And some of the savings we will generate, it will really be spent into direct marketing approaches to our customers directly. And we are not able, of course, to show this immediately because we need to stick to our contracts and we are a reliable partner, and therefore we will fulfill all of our contracts. But nevertheless, we were already able to reduce or close down some of our sport sponsoring effects, for example, the termination of the golf sponsoring. We had this immediate effect. Also, we have a reduced number of managing directors. The head of our HR organization is not replaced. And then the former CEO, the workload based on these two areas is split between Michael Eberhardt and myself. Thus, therefore, we are able to save money on this side. And as I explained at the beginning, we also reduced the space office in Heidelberg, and we terminated our, maybe you are familiar with this, our location in the Dossenheimer Landstraße, and moved all the people into the Speyerer Straße, and therefore we were able to reduce some of the costs too. And we believe that we'll see after the COVID and people are back in the office, we will see some efficiency improvements also, that the people are more easy to meet and so on. Because of the pandemic, of course, we have something like almost 4 million reduced travel expenses. Of course, we expect that afterwards we will see some of the travel expenses coming back, of course. And I personally would like to meet you, for example, in person. And therefore, but we expect that this will come back to a level of, let's look, our outlook for 2021 on slide number 29, we have already published this in the group revenue. We expect something like 160 to 180 million of revenue, and the EBIT margin should be around about 5 to 8%. And in all financial figures, service and software revenue, as well as group EBIT and order entry, we expect, of course, improvements compared to 2020 actuals. I think on the last page, you can see our financial calendar, and we will report already next week interim statements of Q1 2021. And I hope we're going to talk again about this. But now I would like to hand over back to Christoph. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you both, Michael and Heiner. And I think, operator, we are now open for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. And the first question we received is from Gerhard Ogonez of Berenberg. Your line is now open, so please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just have one question on the payment structure of enterprise licenses. Could you give us an idea how this works financially? I guess, you know, the other ones are, you know, project and program licenses. A project is clear, and program is whenever there is a project and they would call up on a new set of software. But how does it work for the enterprise license, please?
Michael, or should I?
I know, I was just moved out. I just redialed, so I didn't get the question at all. So maybe you just do it.
Okay, yeah. So the question was about the payment structure around about enterprise license. I guess you are asking about the payment structure, for example, with partner deals and so on. Is that right?
No, I think, let me just do it, Hannah. When you talk about the enterprise license is a long-term license where the customer can use the license for different scenarios, also not only for a carve-out or a merger, but for all the scenarios. There's only one limitation, which is normally when you do, a merger and you add more than 50% of your revenue, for example, something like this will be limited so that we do not give, too much value away for not having this priced in. Something like this we need to do, and we do in all customer environments. And then our preferred payment is that the customer goes for a subscription kind of model. That means he pays a specific amount per month. And with that, he has always the right to get the newest software, to get access to the newest platform. He can use the software either by a download or only via the cloud. He can decide about this one. In E.ON, for example, we tried to get to the subscription model. E.ON said, okay, they do not do any subscription in any areas. They would like to buy the software. So we have sold the software. The customer showed us something like, or paid us something like roughly 5 million software, for example, and then he pays Eon pays something like 18 to 20% maintenance for the next 5 years. So the main model will be subscription, but in some cases like Eon, where you have a heavy asset-driven kind of organization, they have sometimes different thoughts about what they would like to do. Did this answer your question?
Yeah, perfect. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
The next question received is from Lukas Bahn of Unilist. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. First of all, thank you for the much more transparency in the presentation. That was very helpful also on the pipeline and the various industries and so on. My first question is on the guidance you mentioned. The guidance you gave us in January was without the S&P Poland business, but after the M&A for EXA, you didn't change it. So is the current guidance without S&P Poland, but with EXA?
I know, this is your question.
No, I think so the answer is in the middle. So the guidance is unchanged. So it's not without Poland, it's including Poland, and it's completely without any M&A activities. So the guidance does not include the EXA acquisition, and it is also that the Poland, it's like for like compared to last year. Is this answering your question? Yeah,
so it's probably you will include the EXA transaction when you sell or sold the S&P Poland business.
Yeah, we need to rework then the guidance, of course. Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And then on the S&P Poland transaction again, do you see any positive or negative one-offs from this transaction?
No. I think we received the question also in one of the investor calls, and the point is, from our point of view, we do not expect any negative impacts on our balance sheet or write-offs or so. No.
And also no positive effects?
I would not expect big positive effects, no.
And then, Mr. Ebert, you mentioned also...
I'm a little bit slow in answering this because it's tough to assume because we will create kind of an earn-out model, and the earn-out model for the last remaining 49% is something which is in 3 or 4 years' time, and therefore it's tough for us to say how much will be the effect, but we do not expect any negative impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, Mr. Ewart, you mentioned the more M&A activities, and I remember that you started a campaign with IBM last year about this topic. So can you tell us a little bit how this developed until now and how is it going forward?
You mean in the UK?
Yes.
Okay. So what we just had our business ready in the UK. What we had two things. One, on the one side, our old MD, Ben McRae, he left the company by the end of 2020. So, and we just decided to look for a new MD. So the first thing is I try to do the same in the UK, what we have done with IBM in the US, to hire somebody who is very well known in IBM, worked for IBM, or is, let's say, at least has a good network. This did not work. So we are today on the market to look for an MD who is... well connected to the SAP environment, and we have asked the headhunter to look for this person. On the other side, what we see in the UK, the pipeline is increasing, and since the MD left, the MD was critical towards the partner business. The pipeline with the partner develops great, and it develops across different partners, so just four main partnerships. One is IBM, where we still have a very good, solid opportunity and pipelines developed together. And we signed a couple of deals in the UK with IBM already. Then we have a very good pipeline with TCS, so this Indian pure play. We have seen a very good business in for example, carve out with Rolls-Royce with Deloitte together. So I'm really convinced that our model will apply also in the UK. What you need to consider, Mr. Spang, is the UK business is maybe the more complex business in Europe, not comparable to US or Germany or the DACH region, because in UK SAP position in UK is much weaker. So on our long term plan, let's say the two main regions where we need to drive success is US and Germany and Central Europe. This is the bank for this company for our growth. So we need to work hard to get US as soon as possible up to 100 million revenue and above. And this is where we spend our time and money. Then JPEG, in some regions, JPEG is important. UK, for me, if we increase the business from UK for now from, let's say, 8 million today to something like 30, 40 million in 2025, this would be good. If we make good software business with good margin at the same time, but UK will not save the world in terms of make this company great. Therefore, the market is too fragmented, and we never know what happens with all this Brexit discussion and all these kind of things. But what we see right now is they are ahead of us in pandemic development. They are well connected. We have a strong team. We will find a strong leader. And then I think this should be a business which is delivering value for the company, but it's not critical to make this company outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then last question from my side. You mentioned the deal with Accenture just very shortly. So can you tell us a little bit more about this deal?
I will give you only a short update here. So what we did totally different with Accenture was is we do not sign a deal with an upfront commitment. We said, okay, we do already a lot of opportunities with Accenture. We have right now, I think, 10 or 11 opportunities where we have already engaged and we have signed together. We are just starting in the delivery mode. The first opportunity we signed was Stihl, and then we had a second one with, I think this was Airbus Military. And then we said, okay, how can we drive this better together? And we both agreed, the head of the SAP practice in EMEA and ourselves, we agreed to set up a closer team together as a virtual team in this kind of data transformation factory, what I introduced you earlier, and educate something like the 60 people in the first instance in this factory on the Accenture side, so that we can deliver, we can engage, and we can deliver in a joint approach. And what I really like so far is that this is only focusing on EMEA in the first step. So we also agreed that we will roll out this to the other regions, first to the US as soon as we are up and running here. So we signed the deal 2 weeks ago, but we said, okay, we will not make this. We do now internal messaging on both sides. We have set up a couple of specific trainings for this partner, but the success here will come over the time. And when you look to S4, or when you look to also carve out, and when you look to the Gartner, the analyst who is the market leader in this area, I think now we have a deal with Accenture. We have a deal. We make good business with Deloitte in almost all regions, and we have IBM. And all three are the leading in this quadrant. So I would say now it's really focusing on execute. I also gave very clear guidance to our partner management team that acquiring new partners is not our priority anymore. To get this partner up and running, to really focus on operational excellence, to get the pipeline conversion done, is the focus area for 2021.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks for this.
You're welcome.
Before we take the next question, just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01. And the next question is from Bernd Lauck of Black Wall Capital. Your line is now open, sir. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'd like to add on to what we've just been discussing before, the partner strategy, which appears to be very central to the longer-term strategy of S&P. And you also explained that the the traction with the partners is a little bit behind the original expectations. Can you provide us with more detail in what you have been changing over the last 6 or 9 months in terms of speeding up the partner enablement and where you see already progress and where there's still way more to be done? Thank you.
Okay, but this can take now 2 hours. If you have time, I do this. No, I give you, let me just focus on the key areas. It is a couple of things around 3 main areas. One is the product. The other is how we do we engage in terms of how do we engage in a sales cycle. And the second part is how do we engage in a delivery cycle. Okay, so let me just start with a sales cycle. What we see right now, just to give you a couple of ideas, our pipeline with our partners is something like we have, when we take the 500 million pipeline, we have a split 45% comes from partners and 55% comes directly. So we are almost half-half between partners and direct. The second part is our order entry closing in Q1 was only 20% of the order entries were signed by through the partner channel. 80% was signed by direct business. Now you could see that something is, and this is, let's say, when I go back, the pipeline 12 months ago was 75% direct and 25% partner. So that means the pipeline is now, let's say, pari, but the signing is not pari. This will happen, pretty sure, because we see one thing which is a challenge, our win ratio or hit ratio. So how many deals do we win when we offer 4 deals? So do we win 2, 1, or 0? Our win ratio with our partner business is down by, let's say, 50%. So we have an average win ratio of 45% across all customers, existing customers, new customers, when we do it directly. And our win ratio with partners right now only with 20%, which means that's not where we should stand for. So we have found out a couple of reasons here. One is we are very often the partner just put us as an option in front of the customers, and we are just an option, but we are not the mainstream. The way how they argument about our value, the understanding of the value of S&P is not fully understood. So, and a couple of other reasons. The outcome was, okay, having this experienced, we said, okay, we need to set up a co-selling approach. So we incentivize even the partner, we give him a 5% better software discount if he takes us together to the customer. So we are presenting our business directly to the customer and not through the partner, because this has 2 effects. First of all, we can control and we understand how we get presented in front of the customer, because we are in the room and we may do this ourselves. And the second part is this is also a good training for all the partner employees, and it also helps on a teaming approach, because now we know each other and we are fighting for the same interest and we are fighting for the same account, and this will help us to make more business going forward. So this is the go-to-market side. And we see already good signals across different partners. Again, IBM is more difficult here because they protect their customer base very much as their own customer base. Accenture is very easy, and then you find everything between. Yeah, I'm also very positive about the Indian pure play. So all the Wipros, the Cognizant, the TCS, they are really very much pushy and happy to work together with us. Then on the delivery side, there IBM is really good. IBM delivers a lot of projects already with 50-60% of the project is delivered by themselves. But we also have seen that when we do, let's say, a co-deliver, and we use the project to educate the people at the same time, this really helps from a teaming perspective, and it helps also to get some of the costs down and to make the partner more efficient, because it is a new model how to deliver the software. And at the same time, this is now number 3. At the same time, we invested, for example, in this mission control to make our software more easy to use. I just had a discussion this morning with my consulting leader and said, hey, what we need to do to improve on our Crystal Bridge is 2 things. We are very much technical. Our view how we present Crystal Bridge and the way how we present and analyze is a very technical, let's say, kind of way. I would like to, in the software, I would like to have an option to say, hey, do I talk at the end to a technical experienced guy in the customer set, or do I talk to the business side?
so that the way how we present and analyze is let's say we can differentiate. We are, let's say, an option in the software if we focus on a business outcome, or if we focus on a let's say how protected or how secure is a technical transaction, and what does this mean at the end in terms of downtime and all these kind of things. So there is continuous improvement in our software to make this software more partner ready, easier to use, easier to manage with less, let's say, experience around the area. And with that, I think we see now a good traction. And then what we have started internally, but this is nothing to announce, is okay, hey, when IBM is not working with us in on the one side, then we lost a deal lost a deal together with us, and we signed the same deal with DXC. So that this is the best way how to get the interest of the partner. If you win a deal against IBM with Accenture, or if you win a deal with IBM against Accenture, they take us serious. The only thing where I do not have a total answer right now, we as a team, is what I said before, Mr. Laux, this management of change part, which is it's a real challenge, because when you did, let's say, in history, everything in an Indian center, driven by, let's say, hundreds of people, which are in total cheap and not bad people, but in India, and now you come with a piece of software, you can do this more automated. You need to understand what is the value for the customer and what is the value for you as IBM. And when you talk to some of the IBM for employees, and IBM is just a placeholder here, you can take all the other big ones as well.
Yeah.
They tell you and said, hey, why should I use the software to make this faster with the customer when I can utilize at the end maybe 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 Mondays, which gives me much more revenue. So The answer is clear. The answer is clear. If another partner comes in, another competitor comes in and the customer and he uses our model, and the customer recognizes that he can get the same result or even a much better result for half of the money and much, much safer way how to transform this business with much more analysis upfront, with less downtime, with less revenue, let's say, outages, because the outtime, when you talk about a retailer, each hour costs you maybe, let's say, $1 million or 5 million, depending on the size of the retailer. So we can have a very strong value proposition. And this is something where we do a lot the last couple of days. How do we train our partners in the value proposition? Why is this great for the partner? And why is this great for the customer? So I said, hey, only thinking in value for the customer is good for us in the direct business. But if we talk to a partner, we need to declare, let's say, twice the value of our methodology, because otherwise, if the customer understands this, but the partner is not understanding this, the partner will not present the value to the customer at all, and we will be just an option. So I think we are on a good way here. The challenge is the limitation of the people who can do that. So it is, when I look to the overall, let's say, progress, yep, it's somehow disappointed, but please consider, hey, we are in a COVID time. We do everything remotely. Most of the partner I have not seen beside here on the screen the last 18, 12 months. And this really, when we all consider this, I would say the good message is our strategy works. We get high respect from SAP, for example, in Waldorf. I can tell you that is something we really makes proud. And what the team here delivered really great as S&P is that Waldorf recognized that our partner model, the scaling of our software, is something they really need to take serious. If Accenture, if IBM, if the Wipro, if Cognizant, if the systems, Mischke Hoffmann and Partner, and all the other ones are also using SAP, S&P software for selective data transformation, this could be the quasi-standard. As S&P alone, we would not be a big threat. With all this partner set up, we get visibility in the market.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
The next question received is from Yannick Ziering of Stifel Europe. Your line is now open, sir. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Actually, my questions were all answered. I had one remaining one, I thought, on the partner management, but this has now extensively been answered. So thank you very much for the detail. No open questions for me anymore.
Operator, I think we have one last question.
That's correct. And the last question for today is from Holger Schmidt of Metzler Capital Markets. Your line is now open, so please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. Maybe I missed it, but what has caused the delay of the divestment of S&P Poland? That's the first question. The second question is with regard to your consulting business. You mentioned that it started with a rather low capacity utilization. How much has it improved since? And the third question is on the start of the current quarter. I mean, today you already provided data on the first quarter, but since how has the business developed so far? These are my three questions.
Heiner, do you start?
Yeah, I can start. Why are we delaying with the Poland one? We have to clarify some tax issues, and because we are such in a good partner relationship with All for One and us, we are not in a hurry, so we will take the time to make it cost efficient or tax cash efficient. Yeah, that's the only reason for the delay.
Okay.
And then about Q2 and the consulting topic, Michael, do you want to take over, or
you can do this?
Yeah. So the start of Q2 was one question, and the consulting one, you need to help me again, Mr. Schmidt.
The consulting business was with regard to the capacity utilization at the start of the year. I think in January and February it was quite weak, but then in March it improved. And I wanted to know, or I would like to know, how much it has improved and where do you see the current level?
Okay, yeah, you're right. In January, February was really not good, and we see improvements in the utilization, of course. And this is also in line with the thing I just explained before, that we are really tight in controlling our hirings, and therefore we want to make sure that we see really a high utilization and increasing order entry. And we also see speeding up our project activities, and therefore we expect also in Q2 improved utilization and improved therefore consulting revenues or service revenues. That is something we expect, and therefore based on this we also expect that Q2 will be better than Q1,
both in terms of revenues and earnings.
Yeah. And that's because Michael just explained, we need a really a good top line. And on the cost side, from our point of view, we are really pushing on the efficiency side, as I explained. On the other hand, we are really ready for growth and do not need to add on, for example, more people to manage the growth. And therefore, whenever we are in the area of, let's say, 14 million revenue on a monthly basis, we will see good profitability.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And then my last question is with regard to your business pipeline. I mean, you gave us some figures, but what is the normal conversion ratio that you have achieved in the past, and what we can expect for the future?
Michael, do you want to take this?
Conversion ratio from what to what?
From pipeline to orders.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. So what we do is the conversion is let's say, let me just explain the mechanics, and then but there's a more detailed planning. So the mechanics is that normally in our direct business we have when we have a 300% coverage on unweighted pipeline, and 150% coverage on weighted pipeline, we are pretty sure that we can make our numbers in the quarter or for the full year. The challenge is that we also need to take the 20 biggest deal, or let's say the 50 biggest deal, or everything above 5 million. We need to look, let's say, more in detail and evaluate this as black and white, because when you have a deal, for example, let me say a big partner deal, a 10 million deal with a customer or something like this, it will not help you if you just take this as an average with your probability. You need to say, okay, this deal comes or doesn't come. Therefore, we have introduced a top commit, let's say, pipeline. Or we have two areas, top commit and our key opportunities. And then what we do is we just consider our top opportunities and the key commits as a separate area. This is in total roughly something like 80 deals a year, and the rest we do with the average. So the 300% and the 150% is used for the average, for the rest. And then we and for this 80 deals a year, we go through this deal by deal by deal, and we have a clear win strategy. We have a clear win strategy left. We have a clear, let's say, qualification. If we offer at all, how do we win? Who is our competitor? With what kind of network do we have in the customer side? This is how we do the sales planning, and we do this very transparent. So this is all transparent in Salesforce, and will be presented to our regional leader, to our sales leader via Tableau.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
As we receive no further questions, I hand back to the speaker for closing remarks.
Okay, Christoph,
yes.
I think I give it back to you.
Yeah, I'll do that. Well, thank you. I think there's a lot has been said already, so it's my pleasure to thank you for your time and your interest. Aina said before the financial calendar shows that Q1 results are due in just about a week, so we will be speaking soon again. In the meantime, if you have any further questions, do not hesitate to contact us, Investor Relations, and we will take care of it. With that being said, I think... again, thank you for your time and have a nice rest of the day, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.
Thank you. Bye.